Welcome, and thank you for joining us on This Week in State Tax. My name is Harley Duncan, and I'm with the state and local team in KPMG's Washington National Tax. This is the second of our three-part series discussing recent legislation in Washington State that imposes the retail sales tax on several previously excluded services, going back to being effective October 1, 2025. Today, we're going to specifically speak to the imposition of retail sales tax on three services: custom software, custom website development, and information technology services. As well, we're going to take a look at some of the challenges that our specialists think are likely to arise in the sourcing of certain of the services. With us again to explain what's going on are Michelle Basler and Alex Lowe, our Seattle-based State Tax Resource Network specialists for retail sales tax and B&O tax matters in Washington. Not only do they bring a wealth of professional tax experience to the table, a couple little-known fun facts: Michelle and her family still like to take cross-country trips by automobile. God be with you. And Alex has climbed Mount Rainier in Washington State, much more skilled in strength than I could ever show. And just to share, refresh your memory, our State Tax Resource Network consists of KPMG professionals in each state that have a working relationship with key state tax authority professionals in the state, as well as in-depth knowledge of the law and procedure there to assist clients. With that, Michelle, let's start with you on the basics. What is the new legislation that we affectionately call Enrolled Senate Substitute Bill 5814 say about how custom software and custom website development are defined for tax purposes? We'll get to information technology services in a bit.
Thanks, Harley. Historically, most types of software engineering services were professional services, and they were not subject to sales tax. Instead, those services were taxed for B&O tax purposes under the services and other classification. But now, sales of custom software, customization of software, IT services, and custom website development are all retail sales. So that means those sales are subject to retail sales tax and the retailing B&O tax. So while sellers may now have a sales tax collection obligation that they didn't previously, they do get the benefit of a lower B&O tax rate that applies to retailers. So custom software is defined by statute, and it means software created for a single person. Customization of software means alteration, modification, or development of applications using or incorporating pre-written computer software for a specific person. So services to configure software to work with other software, that's going to be customization and subject to sales tax. So generally, we expect a purchaser to receive a software license where they purchase custom software as opposed to purchasing customization services. But at this point, that distinction may not mean a lot. Both services are subject to sales tax. Website development services means the design, development, and support of a website provided by a website developer to a customer. And custom website development services include services that are performed for both new and for existing websites. It's important to note that the sale of these services between affiliate entities are, by definition, not a retail sale. So where a parent sells IT-type services to a sub, those services would not be subject to retail sales tax, but would still be subject to B&O tax under the service and other classification.
There's one thing that perplexes me. The bulk of the work in these sorts of projects, especially large custom software projects, is not in the actual code writing. It's rather in the planning, the needs identification, assessment, testing, and the like. Are we to assume that these services are considered part of the development and therefore taxable, or they're going to be called IT services and still be taxable? What's the deal there?
The department has issued some guidance on that in their interim guidance. And basically, all of the services that are related to the production of the new custom software would be considered part of the selling price of the custom software. That would include design, development, testing, implementation, and installation services. All of those services would be part of the custom software selling price subject to sales tax.
All right. Well, that makes a whole lot more sense than I was thinking in my own mind at the time. Thanks for that, Michelle. So, Alex, let's turn to our old friend sourcing the transaction. What do we know about where the sale of these services is going to be considered to have taken place, or how should the seller and the buyer go about sourcing these services for sales tax purposes?
Under the retail sale framework, these newly taxable categories are sourced to the location where the services are received by the purchaser and follow a sourcing hierarchy that we often see for retail transactions, which is source to place of receipt if known, and if not, then otherwise source to purchase address from business records, more specifically contracting or billing records. It's worth highlighting that the interim guidance from the Washington DOR does provide some additional guidelines and examples that have been leveraged from the streamlined sales tax guidance provided for computer-related services. Perhaps the most notable element of these sourcing guidelines would be that for the first tier in the hierarchy, the concept of the place of receipt has expanded guidance contemplating the sourcing of these services to multiple locations. Specifically, the guidelines indicate that if the purchaser receives the services at multiple known locations, then those services are to be allocated at the time of invoice. The guidance issued indicates that this allocation should be done based on either specific known allocation amount, equal proportion to known locations, or agreed upon allocation as indicated by the customer, so long as the methodology is quote unquote reasonable and consistent. From a required documentation standpoint, the guidance indicates that the sellers should coordinate with customers and have documented these details around sourcing in their contracts, invoices, or other service agreements.
All right. What the department's saying, but as we'll talk about in a bit, I think it's really going to come down to how it applies in what everybody refers to as the real world. What about multiple points of use and direct pay permits, these vehicles sometimes used to shift the remittance and collection responsibility to the buyer that really seems to be the person in possession of most of the information? Are they applicable with respect to custom software and the customization and the website development?
That's a good question. I'll start with the easy answer first and say yes, as it relates to the use of direct pay permits for these services. If a customer has secured a direct pay permit from the Washington Department of Revenue, then they can utilize it on these transactions. And as a result, the vendor would not charge sales tax and the customer is left to self-assess and remit the tax. For MPU certificates, the answer is certainly a bit more tortured. If we're talking about custom software or customization of pre-written software, the answer would be yes, so long as the services are not bundled with other charges. For custom website services and MPU eligibility, the answer is a resounding maybe. To the extent the services fall under the definition of a digital automated service, which again is defined as any service transferred electronically that uses one or more software applications. With respect to custom website services, I think it's worth noting that the department's guidelines do indicate and acknowledge that a DAS conclusion is possible and thereby MPU exemption would be potentially applicable, although those same guidelines from the department do comment saying that they are unaware of a specific example in the realm of custom website services, but they'll leave that determination to sellers and customers. My own thoughts around potential digital automated services conclusions as it relates to custom website services is that there certainly would seem to be various contracts in place that could involve the development of websites that also have integrated software application elements embedded within the website that could very well fall under that DAS characterization, but it will certainly be a nuanced determination exercise.
All right. I think it's worth noting as well, There's a prerequisite for an MPU, which is concurrently available for use both within and without Washington State.
Yes, good point. That prong has to be met too.
Yeah, because you could see, well, there's lots of applications even in Washington State, but you've got that prerequisite. Alex, let's stick with you and move to information technology services or IT services. What's the statute say about this? And I know the department's interim guidance provided a rather long list of these items, but what's your assessment of what's covered in IT services and some key examples that you think would be important?
As it relates to IT services, the department's interim guidance that has been released provides a long list of services that are included in the definition of IT services, now subject to sales tax. If you look at the department's provided list, it seems to cover almost every form of company or corporate IT services that you can think of. Just to go through some of the specifically listed items, the list includes IT services that are provided to corporate employees, such as IT help desk, telephone consulting, and remote training as it relates to network hardware or software. It includes IT onboarding and offboarding services, for example, setting up users with laptops and accounts. The services also include any IT-related services that provide network diagnostic analysis, testing, support, and maintenance on new or existing network infrastructure, network security management and implementation of network security strategies, managed IT services, including infrastructure, network configuration, analysis, and implementation, IT migration services and support, including the transfer or relocation of IT services from one environment to another, along with associated project management services. You have listed in there IT-related consulting or project management services, including planning efforts, analysis, engineering, testing, or deployment of information technology, project management and technical program manager services that manage engineers and consultants who are providing IT services, IT consulting and support services in connection with digital products, and finally, IT services that troubleshoot hardware and software issues and that provide information technology solutions. So clearly, just based upon that long list there, it's a purposefully expansive list of all forms of IT services and seemingly adjacent consulting, support, and management services that are connected with IT services.
It certainly is extensive, and it kind of goes from the mundane. I mean, I know they're not mundane if you're the one that needs the help desk services, but really focused on dealing with the internal part of the company and its IT infrastructure to really more outward looking as well. And you get into some of the more high level information security, network management, and the like. I get why they try to be expansive, and you don't want to be a provider that gets caught trying to decide, well, is this a retail sale or is it subject to a B&O service tax? I get that. I think the surmise is if you're in the IT world, you're probably going to be making retail sales. So, Michelle, as we go on in our journey, sourcing of IT services, what'd they say about that? Anything new? Or they come back to the standard framework of use the hierarchy, known locations, and the like?
For the most part, the sourcing framework that we've already discussed is going to be applied to IT services. Basic rules that the services are taxed based on where the services are received by the purchaser, which is the location where the purchaser makes first use of the service. So if the seller knows the IT services will be received at multiple locations, or if the seller and the purchaser agree upon an allocation, then the services should be allocated to those locations. If the seller doesn't know the location where the services will be received and doesn't come to an agreement with the purchaser, then the seller should source the services to the business address of the customer, assuming that using that address isn't done in bad faith.
So it's the standard model that flows through these. If you know the location where it's available for first use, it goes there. If it's multiple locations and they're not known, you can reasonably allocate them, equally allocate them, or you can reach an agreement at the time of the invoice with the buyer and have an agreed upon allocation that I presume the department will at least look at, give an assessment of reasonableness. And if you're just not at all sure where they're going to be used, or you don't know the locations, then it's your default to the business addresses. Well, thanks very much to both of you for that. We've talked from time to time about sourcing, and as we've talked sort of offline, if you will, there's concerns about how this is really going to work and how it's going to be applied to actual fact situations. So thought we'd give you a chance to express some concerns or things that you're kind of keeping your eye on and areas that you think could be troublesome as clients begin to try to follow this sourcing advice that's provided. Michelle, you want to start?
I have been thinking about the fact that consulting and project management type services, which might not involve actual hands-on programming efforts, those under the interim guidance would be subject to retail sales tax. And I guess the sourcing is a little confusing there. If my deliverable is perhaps a report with maybe some recommendations in it, where actually is that report first used? Is it where the customers, the people who will review the report, is it where they're located? Or is it where they will implement the recommendations in the report? Or perhaps they're not going to implement the recommendations in the report, and so it really isn't used in multiple locations. So I think to be determined on a consulting project, how the sourcing might be done.
Is that the end product, or is it a prelude to something else that may have a different character to it than just the delivery of the report? And some of that may depend on what the people reviewing the report say about
right.
it, right?
You may not right. know upon the delivery of the report where the use of that report will actually take place.
Yeah, and that's one of the troubling things in my mind. You go through all the sourcing guidance. If you can agree at the time of the invoice, you can do it that way. That's just their lips to God's ears for getting it all in place prior to the issuance of the invoice, but doesn't always happen in my estimation. So, Alex, your thoughts on the same question. Where do you think the challenges, as we like to say, in the sourcing arena may well arise?
There will certainly be a heck of a lot of gray areas and differences of opinion related to sourcing. One issue that's certainly going to come up that relates to the concept of sourcing or who's involved, responsible for making sourcing determinations, is really the analysis of whether these newly taxable services fall under that general definition of digital automated service, which in and of itself is a broad gray area definition of simply service transferred electronically that involves use of one or more software applications, which obviously, that determination is what will ultimately hinge upon the question about whether or not a multiple points of use certificate can be furnished by the customer, presuming also that there's concurrent use without Washington. I just feel like it's going to be such a gray area for a number of different service offerings that are picked up in these categories. And it's going to be so important, given the MPU exemption certificate really allows for a much more manageable seller customer invoicing process as it relates to the associated sourcing for sales tax collection, where if an MPU certificate's in the mix, then that really simplifies things, takes the seller out of that complicated invoicing and sourcing determination, and that they're absolved from sales tax collection, and that's just left with simply the customer to make that determination and self-assess or omit use tax. That's certainly one area that comes to mind. Another complicated and uncertain sourcing area, I think, will be significant questions around to what extent can these services be sourced or allocated based upon the customer's use in the market? Specifically, if you have software applications that are developed or customized where clearly the intention is to be directly market-facing for user interaction by the customer's customers, there will be a big question. I think it put a bit of hand-wringing around, will the department allow for allocation to the market? And I guess part of the reason why I feel like that's going to be such a noteworthy area is historically, the department has been pretty clear as it relates to allocation or sourcing in the realm of multiple points of use certificates, that they've been pretty clear that allocations can only be calculated based upon direct use by the customer's employees or agents. There is one notable recent exception to that framework, and that would be the guidance we've seen recently from the department, where they've indicated additional allocation or sourcing leniency with respect to digital advertising, where they've made clear that that allocation can be out to the customer's market And so I think there's a question about how much will that leniency extend to these other categories of newly taxable services? That'll be an important sourcing allocation question, certainly within the MPU exemption realm, as well as potentially for some of the upfront invoicing coordination between sellers and buyers.
Yep. All right. Well, again, thanks to both of you for your participation in this podcast. I thought that was very clear and very helpful. And maybe we've gone a bit longer than we sometimes do, but I do think that's the nature of the beast here. And the discussion was really good. We really appreciate your participation. We look forward to our next discussion next week. And we're going to talk about the taxation of live presentations, temporary staffing, and various investigation and security services that are now subject to the retail sales tax. Before we leave, I just want to leave you with a brief vignette on Washington. We all know that the state has a long and storied history in music. Washington is the birthplace of Bing Crosby, Jimi Hendrix, Macklemore, and a number of others. But my favorite is that this is where the group, The Ventures, was formed in Tacoma, Washington. And who can ever forget that driving guitar line and all the surfer music that at least some of us listen to? You're probably most familiar with The Ventures from songs like Pipeline and the Hawaii Five-O theme music. But did you know that The Ventures were also the creators of the Pink Panther theme music, The House of the Rising Sun, and Ghost Riders in the Sky? If you listen to them, they've all got that guitar line going through them. Thanks again for joining us. Please listen to our subsequent podcast in about a week. And also, please see our SALT alert on these newly taxable services, which is available on the landing page of this podcast. Thank you very much.